Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and our next guest is the lawyer who argued Edie Windsor's challenge to the Defense of Marriage Act before the Supreme Court. You may remember Edie Windsor as the 84-year-old widow who had to pay over $350,000 in federal estate taxes after her partner passed away here in New York because DOMA prevented the federal government from recognizing their marriage. Her lawyer, Roberta Kaplan, will be speaking with Edie at the 92nd Street Y tonight, and she's here now to talk about what might be some of the next legal battles. Roberta Kaplan, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Good morning.
So let's start with something in the news right now. Yesterday, the Supreme Court temporarily banned same-sex marriages in Utah while that state appeals a recent decision that allowed same-sex marriages in the state. These marriages have been actually going on for a few weeks since a federal judge struck down the state's ban on gay marriage. And as it turns out, Utah used your victory against the Federal Defense of Marriage Act to support its case to ban gay marriage in the state because the Windsor ruling said marriage decisions should be left up to the states. Are you feeling the irony of that this morning?
I am, but I think it should also be noted, Brian, that the district court judge who said that the state of Utah needed to allow gay couples in Utah also relied on the decision in Windsor. And I think that reasoning by Judge Shelby was the far stronger reasoning.
What was that reasoning?
Yeah, essentially, if you look at the Windsor opinion, the Supreme Court, the majority of the court, in an opinion by Justice Kennedy, said 11 times in, I think, about 23 pages that gay people in their relationships have equal dignity to straight people in their relationships. And once the Supreme Court has acknowledged that, once we can all concede that there is no difference between gay relationships and gay marriages and straight marriages, then as the court concluded in Utah, I think it's really all over but the shouting.
But the Supreme Court did not establish a federal right to gay marriage, right?
It absolutely did not. That was not an issue in the Windsor case. We did not ask for it in the Windsor case. In Windsor, the couples at issue, like Edie Windsor, was already married, and there was nothing that was going to change that. The only question is in Windsor, if you have couples married under state law, can they be discriminated categorically under federal law?
In 2004, 66% of Utah voters voted for an amendment to the state's constitution to ban same-sex marriages. So how much can the courts, how much do you want the courts to intervene to strike down something like that?
Well, you know, our country has a great tradition both for popular democracy, as you've noted, and for something called the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Unfortunately, I think one of the great strengths of this nation is that both of those things coexist. And from time to time, though not often, statutes are passed by citizens that turn out to be unconstitutional because they violate the rights of the minorities. And I think the statute like the one at issue in Utah that discriminates against gay people, discriminates against their children, is one of those statutes that under the Constitution will be held to be violative of fundamental principles of equal protection.
I see a couple of calls are coming in already. I want to open the phones for people who want to talk to Roberta Kaplan, the lawyer who argued for Edie Windsor in the famous Defense of Marriage Act case before the Supreme Court that they won. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Just to stay on this Utah case for another minute, hundreds of couples have actually gotten married just in the past few weeks since the original district court decision which struck down the state law. Do you think those marriages will remain valid?
Ultimately, yes. Ultimately, they're going to be valid. The real question is what's going to happen in the interim. My understanding is that's a question that needs to be decided by the governor and the attorney general of Utah. But it's pretty hard to unmarry people. Aside from divorce, which hopefully hasn't happened yet for any of these couples, it's pretty hard to unmarry people once they've been married. So I'm hopeful that the Utah officials will respect these marriages as they should.
So is this headed to the Supreme Court with, you know, one side citing your case for upholding the Utah ban on gay marriage and the other side citing your case for striking it down?
There is no question that a case is headed for the Supreme Court. Whether it'll be the case in Utah, whether it'll be a case in Virginia, whether it'll be a case in Ohio or some other state remains to be seen. But ultimately, the Supreme Court will have to decide this question.
So if the Supreme Court gets this case, will it actually be in front of them to decide if there is a constitutional right to same-sex marriage based on that dignity that Justice Kennedy was talking about and that you were talking about?
That will absolutely be the question before the court in this case or one of these cases, whether under our principles, equal protection principles of our Constitution and due process principles of our Constitution, whether you can treat a couple who's exactly the same as a straight couple completely differently solely because they're gay.
You don't think they're ready for that, do you, at the Supreme Court?
I am not in the business of predicting what's in the minds of the justices of the Supreme Court. We did our best in Windsor and we succeeded in that case. I do think that when the case gets to them, they will decide it the right way and they will hold that there is a right for gay couples to be treated equally in marriage under the Constitution.
So let's talk a little bit about the landmark case that you will forever be famous for now, United States versus Windsor. Am I right that gay rights groups didn't want to support Edie Windsor when she first tried to get help for her case?
Well, what happened is that after Thea died, Edie always knew she was going to have this tax problem, but she hadn't really appreciated the enormity of it. And she got, as you noted earlier, a $363,000 estate tax bill. And one of the reasons that Edie is such a great client is, to use her words, she was indignant. It's great to have a client who uses words like indignant. She was indignant when she saw that bill and she wanted to do something about it.
Also, if you want to get conservatives on your side, challenge the estate tax.
Exactly. That's not the first time that thought crossed my mind, Brian. So she went to some of the groups and asked them to represent her, and they turned her down. And for me, it was like winning the lawyer lottery, because she has a very good friend, a guy by the name of Brendan Fay, who's a Catholic gay activist, and he's a good friend of a friend of mine. And that's how I got her number, and I think I went to see her the next day. And for me, it was an easy choice. It took me about 3 minutes to decide.
So was Edie Windsor, in a way, the perfect plaintiff, not only because this implicitly challenged the estate tax, but she was an older woman who'd been in a committed relationship, a legal marriage in her state, which was New York, and the committed relationship lasted for 40 years.
Absolutely. And it, not just a committed relationship, but I don't know how many people know this, but Thea, about 15 or so years into their relationship, her spouse was diagnosed with a very, very virulent form of MS. And over time, she lost the use of her legs and then her arms. So that by the time she passed away in 2009, she was only able to lift a finger. And they made sure that as little in Thea's life changed as possible. In fact, the day she died, she was a psychologist and she had two patients who she was scheduled to see that day. And in my mind, and I think in the mind of the justices, that's a marriage. I mean, anyone would be lucky to have a marriage like that. Talk about to have and to hold till death do one's part.
Thomas in Brooklyn Heights, you're on WNYC with attorney Roberta Kaplan. Hello, Thomas.
Yes, the final comment about the partner's MS is a perfect segue into my question. I'm interested in knowing what you think about issues related to not so much same sex, but the issues related to people with disabilities. People with disabilities need services like Medicaid and home care, but if you need to apply for services, the absence of your spouse then become considered for the Medicaid application.
The assets of your spouse.
Right. So what there is with real, there's a systemic barrier for people with disabilities, whether same-sex or not, to getting marriage. And I'm wondering whether you think that might be subject to ongoing litigation.
Is that a point of view law that you're familiar with at all?
I apologize, sir, but this is way outside my area of expertise. I'm not a disability lawyer. I know that a lot of federal programs have that requirement that you combine assets of a married couple, but that's all I can really say.
Thomas, good luck with your situation. 212-433-WNYC. If you want to talk to Roberta Kaplan, 212-433-9692. And Tim in Baldwin, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning. I just wanted to raise a point I've raised in the program before. There's a radical difference between rights and benefits. I have absolutely no issues, qualms whatsoever with the gay right to marry. But to allow benefits that were originally designed to support people with children to gay couples is absurd, or, for that matter, heterosexual couples that don't have children, which is becoming a larger and larger percentage of the heterosexual community. The right to marriage is a human right, and no one should question that in any state or any place in the world. But the benefits that society ascribes to people who marry and have children are very different. It's like paying for sex, but the country is paying for people to have sex. It's absurd. People who have children deserve the rights of inheritance, deserve Social Security, and there may have to be a new sliding scale for the number of children, because since 1950 and the development of birth control, there's been a dramatic change in the landscape of marriage.
Tim, I'm going to leave it there. I guess I understand what he's raising, which is not to have gay couples and straight couples treated differently under the law, but to treat childless couples and couples with children differently under the law. I don't know if you've ever heard that one before.
You know, it's interesting that in terms of what the Supreme Court said and in terms of what Justice Kennedy said in his opinion in Windsor, the fact that many, many thousands of gay couples throughout this country have children and are raising children had a big impact on Justice Kennedy. And he talked quite clearly and quite movingly in the decision about the humiliation for those children of not allowing their parents to marry. And there's no question that that very much influenced the court in reaching the result that it did.
Does it bother you when people make an argument for gay marriage by saying it's good for the economy if there are more weddings, gay or straight, or other things like that? We heard that in New York and New Jersey. We hear that in many states.
Let me put it this way. I'm all for more marriages, and I'm all for there being more money for florists and caterers and whoever, wedding halls, et cetera. But that's not an argument we made in our brief to the Supreme Court. We weren't arguing the economic benefits to the marriage industry, although we were arguing the economic benefits, as I just mentioned, to these families and to their children.
I guess my question is, does it demean the human rights argument to even make an economic argument when arguing this case?
You know, I'm just a country lawyer here from New York City, and my view of doing cases is that you take any argument that works to the extent that people and certainly weddings are joyous occasions, and people should be able to celebrate that. That's part of being married and having the society publicly acknowledge the relationship. But whatever it takes, Brian, it's an argument I'm happy to make.
I don't know if you saw Jeffrey Toobin's article in The New Yorker shortly after the DOMA decision, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said, presidents appoint Supreme Court justices, senators vote to confirm them, so whether we like it or not, Justice Kennedy, the swing voter who voted your way in the Windsor case, was nominated by Reagan. The two justices nominated by Bush voted to keep DOMA as it was. So do you think if a Republican wins in 2016, the expansion of gay rights by the court may be put on hold? Or are we coming to the limits of the role of the Supreme Court in this entire conversation?
Look, I mean, there's no question on the one hand that we didn't have a lot of leeway in terms of the vote. We won 5-4. Justice Kennedy did turn out to be the swing voter in this case, and we didn't get any of the votes of the other four justices. And I don't anticipate that changing for the time being. On the other hand, the Windsor decision is what it is. The Supreme Court very much values and gives precedence in significance to the concept of precedent. It doesn't overrule or change cases lightly. In Windsor, and this concept of the equal dignity of gay people and their marriages is now the law of the land.
I guess it's not about the Supreme Court rolling back its own decision, but I guess I'm curious where else the gay rights, you know, gay marriage in particular, but gay rights even more broadly, legal battle has to go that could land it in the Supreme Court in coming years. Where do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very likely that the next big battle in the Supreme Court will be marriage in a state like Virginia or Utah that currently doesn't permit gay couples to marry. I think that's very likely. It's possible that another case could come up earlier. For example, there's a case in Ohio where a gay male couple were married. One of the men was very, very ill and passed away. And the Ohio court held that that was a valid marriage under Ohio law, even though, like Virginia and Utah, Ohio doesn't recognize these marriages. That could come up there. There's a case in the Ninth Circuit in California right now about whether you can excuse someone from a jury solely because they're gay, and whether that's constitutional, whether that's kosher under the law. So there are other issues that could come up. But I think that because marriage has so much to do with who we are, because being gay is about who you love, and being married in our legal system is the representation or the manifestation of that, I think that in a lot of ways, marriage is the ultimate battle.
Could a polygamous group from Utah use the Defense of Marriage Act ruling in the Windsor case to argue for protection for polygamy under the law?
Well, the big difference between the Windsor case and polygamy is that couples in polygamous marriages have the right to marry. They're allowed to marry one person. The question is whether they should have the right to marry nine people. And so the distinction is based on the number of people they want to marry, not who they are and their ability to marry altogether the way it is for gay people.
Meaning it's just a fundamentally different question? Because obviously people who are against gay marriage bring this up all the time as a slippery slope argument, right? Oh, if you allow this and you have polygamy, you're going to have bestiality, or I don't know, whatever they want to say.
Right.
But then there are some people who say, well, wait a minute, polygamists actually have a legitimate claim here if you have three or more consenting adults and the legal basis is actually the same.
Yeah. In my mind, it is a fundamentally different question. With respect to gay people, it's whether they can marry the people they love. In polygamy, it's whether they can marry three or four or five or six people that they love. And those are very different questions. In addition, no one has or could possibly argue that being married is anything but a good thing for both of the participants, both of the couple members in a gay marriage, as well as their children. And while I don't want to opine on that, different arguments have been made in the context of polygamy.
By the way, I want to give a little information for the benefit of our first caller in this segment, Thomas, who had that question about disabilities and marriage rights. RJ from Prospect Heights posted on our comments page, Thomas should check with the Centers for Independence of the Disabled in New York, which is CIDNY.org, for advice. So just passing along that piece of information in case Thomas is still listening and in case that helps you with your disability situation with respect to marriage law. The Centers for Independence of the Disabled in New York, CIDNY.org, in case that helps. And we will have to leave it there with Roberta Kaplan, who will be speaking at the 92nd Street Y tonight at 8:15 with her client Edie Windsor and the comedian and actress Judy Gold. What's her role in this?
Judy Gold is, I think she's a big fan, certainly a big fan of Edie's, and has had a great interest in this. And I guarantee you there will be laughter tonight, given what a great comedian she is.
You can go to 92y.org for more information on that. Roberta Kaplan is the lawyer who argued Edie Windsor's case against DOMA in front of the Supreme Court. Thank you so much for coming on our show. It's been a real pleasure. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, children's book author Kate DiCamillo, author of books like Because of Winn-Dixie and The Tale of Despero, now the ambassador for young people's literature from the Library of Congress. Stay with us.